We have great privilege in mentioning that we have invited a very committed sister in the Deen of Islam, a sister who is working for the promotion of the Deen, the defense of the Deen, and supporting the Muslim Ummah and the Muslim Brothers. This sister is Sister Munassar Arani, and she is from Arani and Co. Solicitors. She's a sister who has taken part in defending many Muslim high-profile cases. Those brothers who are some of the brothers who are in Guantanamo Bay currently, this sister is representing them. Those brothers who are charged recently in the UK, she is representing them. In fact, even the Finsbury Park Mosque raid, she was actually representing the Muslims concerning this issue as well. And even those brothers who had problems and having problems in Yemen, British Muslims, and she is also representing them. A sister who is, as I have said, committed herself in working for the Deen of Islam and helping the Muslims and supporting the Muslims and supporting the Deen of Islam. Today, inshallah, she will speak about what is happening to the Muslims and what our rights are in the society as Muslims and what we can do for those Muslim brothers or sisters who are facing trials and are being persecuted because of them being Muslims. Inshallah, I leave you now with Sister Arani to speak about this topic.
It is vital for everyone to become aware of what your rights are. There are three acts in particular that I will be referring to in this particular speech. The first one is the Terrorism Act 2000. The second one is the Anti-Terrorism Crime and Security Act 2001. And the third one is going to be the Immigration, Nationality and Asylum Act 2002. Although what has been stated in this particular matter, I'm making references to the Terrorism Act, in reality, quite a lot of the same principles and the basic rules apply also to the other criminal offences in relating to other criminal provisions in this country. So what are your rights where MI5 are concerned? The reason why I'm going to be talking about MI5 is due to the fact that there are a large percentage of the Muslim community who are being contacted by MI5 officers. A lot of people are panicking because they don't know what to do. A lot of people are uncertain. Thank you. A lot of people are uncertain what their choices are when they are approached by MI5 officers. That is in spite of the fact that there's already been a leaflet called Know Your Rights, which sets out in black and white what a person should or should not do when they're approached by MI5 officers. But unfortunately, it appears that the message is not going across to the Muslim community. It is vital, not just for the males, but also for the females and the Muslim community as a whole, to become aware of what your rights are. So I hope that everybody is going to be taking these rights into consideration, because the same rules apply not just to the men but also to the women, because there are also women who are being arrested under the Terrorism Act, who are being approached by MI5 officers as well.
This one is not on.
Sorry.
Okay. Where MI5 officers are concerned, supposing if you're walking down the road and MI5 officers approach you, what are you supposed to do? There are two choices that you have. The first choice is you can work for MI5 officers. The second choice is that you don't have to work for MI5 officers. There is no obligation under any law for you to work for MI5 officers as their agents, spies, or call it whatever you want to. There's no obligation for people to become their agents. There is no obligations for you to answer any questions. It is very important for people to be aware of these basic rights. There is no duty upon you under the law for you to answer any questions that have been put to you by MI5 officers. They do not have power to arrest. What MI5 officers can do is approach you and ask you if you want to work for them. They will offer you payment, and the other things that they will do is attempt to entice you, if you do not have British citizenship, for you to be granted British citizenship if you provide them with sufficient information which satisfies them. There is already well-known documented information relating to previous people who worked for MI5. These people basically deceive other individuals whom they become very close to and provide information about them to MI5 officers. They're not even allowed to inform their families or friends that they're working for MI5. In return, they receive payments. In return, they receive favors. MI5 agents have also have been known to even sleep with individuals in order to get information by way of pillow talk. So they will basically have a relationship with you, even if they wish to, so that they can obtain information, so that this information can be provided to MI5. MI5 is basically there to gather information, intelligence information about people. You probably are wondering, so who's going to be targeted? Well, there's lots of people who can be targeted: trade unions, lawyers, politicians, Greenpeace, animal rights organisations, activists, individuals who are perceived to be a threat to the state. A file is opened on those individuals. MI5 officers are assigned to those individuals. They never give out their real names. They always use nicknames: Ian, Matt, Alex, etc., in order to for you to contact them and in order for you to provide information to them if you decide to work for MI5. It is also very important for you to understand and appreciate the fact that there is no obligation on you to work. You should, however, if you're approached by MI5 officers, take their name, contact telephone number, contact your solicitors, and let your solicitors write to them if you do not wish to work for MI5 officers, so at least there is a record kept there. It is very important for us as individuals to be able to do this, because a lot of people who are being approached by MI5 officers are not doing so. They think they've gone away, we've accepted them, we don't want to work, and that's the end of the story. No, it's not, because there's a new trend that is taking place at the moment. Those people who've been approached by MI5 officers are also being targeted at a later stage. Quite a large number of the clients whom I'm representing have been previously approached by MI5 officers. We've written letters saying, sorry, go away, we do not wish to, the client does not wish to basically become an agent or an informer for MI5. They've made admissions that the client is innocent, that they do not suspect the client of any involvement in order to attempt to entice the client. In spite of the letters being written, we have had to go so far as to threaten MI5 that injunction proceedings will be taken out against them if the harassment continues. Unfortunately, what is taking place now is that people are being picked up under the Terrorism Act 6 months, 8 months, a year down the line. So don't think just because you've been approached by MI5 officers and they say you're innocent that you will not be picked up later on, 6 months, a year down the line, by anti-terrorist branch. That is a very high possibility, and it's very important that not only you but members of your family are made aware of this, so that you can be act appropriately if that eventuality occurs with you. So what are your rights under the Terrorism Act? So supposing if somebody's being raided first thing in the morning, say approximately 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, anti-terrorist branch officers come into your house, they break down the doors and they arrest you. There's panic in the house. They usually come in with warrants for your arrest and for the premises to be searched. The arrest takes place under Section 41 of the Terrorism Act for instigation, preparation or commission of the offence. This usually takes place in the earliest hours of the morning, between 5:30, 6, 6:37 in the morning. Officers will request the wife, the children or any other members of the family who are in the house to vacate the house, for the family members to either go and live at other places, if they have any other relatives or friends whom they can stay with. if they do not have anybody whom they can stay with, then accommodation is provided by the police at police expense for the people to reside in hotel accommodation until the conclusion of the search. The search can take place somewhere between 5 days to even 7 days, sometimes shorter than that, sometimes longer, maximum 7 days. It is important for you to also realize that various documents and items will be seized from your house. Mainly computers, emails will be searched, records, bank accounting details, any electrical equipment, any documents, papers, passports, IDs will be removed. The searches that take place under the Terrorism Act are very, very thorough searches. You also have the explosives police officers going in to check for explosives or any other items of that nature. They will go into every single room, every single item, even the loft. So every single place in your house can be searched by the anti-terrorist branch. What happens to the men is that the men are taken into the police station. What happens with the women and the children are that they're requested to stay elsewhere. In some cases, they are allowed to stay there, but it's very rare for that to happen. Applications can be made in respect of a warrant for further detention of the individual. This is usually done after 36 hours of the person being detained in custody. The maximum time that a person can be detained in custody, not only under the Terrorism Act, but any other legislation, is 7 days. So it's very important for the people who have been detained, as well as their loved ones, families, and friends, to appreciate the fact that the maximum time that the police can detain any person will be 7 days. And on the seventh day, the police officers have to decide whether or not the person should be charged. I'm going to go on to now talk about what happens to the men when they're detained. There are cases when women are detained, but I will refer to it as a male example. So what happens when you're taken by the police officers as an escorted to the police station? You normally arrive in the custody cells. It's Paddington Green Police Station only, because there's a SKU unit there. If there's an overflow, then you will be taken to Charing Cross Police Station. There is a very long, lengthy procedures in order for you to be your details to be taken by the custody officer, who will want to basically ascertain from you whether or not you wish to have a solicitor instructed. Please, for God's sake, request a solicitor to represent you. The solicitor does not charge you anything for their presence at the police station. I know there are certain lawyers who attempt to entice clients into stating that if they're paid the right price, they can get better advice than legal aid lawyers. That's a whole lot of nonsense. What you should do is you should ensure that you have a name of a solicitor, and that name can be provided to the custody officer. You have a right to speak to the solicitor, and the solicitor will attend the police station in order to discuss matters with you. It is also very important when you make your first telephone contact with the solicitor via the telephone that you do not discuss the intimate details of your case, because everything you discuss is being recorded by the police officers. And also, whilst you're in the custody area, there is CCTV there and voice recording taking place 24 hours. Therefore, it's important for you to realize that any conversation you're going to be having with the solicitor is going to be limited in that regard. It's important for you not to sign anything until the solicitor attends, and or to answer any questions that the police officers put to you. There's a very long and lengthy procedure that takes place prior to the arrival of the solicitor. Namely, your fingerprints will be taken, your DNA and photographs will be taken. Because this is anti-terrorism legislation that is being applied here, the procedure is very lengthy, whereas with other criminal proceedings matter, it's a very short, swift procedure. So it can take up to 3 hours for one person's fingerprints, DNA and photographs to be taken. So, your solicitor arrives at the station, and you've been through the process of having your fingerprints, DNA, and photographs taken. Contacts made with your family who know what's going on. What happens next is, if the police officers are in a position to proceed with the matter, they will serve the solicitor with what is called a disclosure sheet. The disclosure sheet is has very limited information. The first disclosure sheet will have approximately 4 to 5 lines, 6 lines, wanting to discuss very basic general information about you. What's your name? What's your family makeup? What do you do for your living? Where were you born? Have you ever, have you got any kids? When were you married? Very, very basic information. It's a temptation for anyone to think, this is so easy. These officers must be so stupid that I can answer these questions. What you don't seem to realize is that these officers are really just going to test you. They've got more information about you, and they haven't disclosed that information at this stage, because what they really want you to do is to answer their questions. So please do not fall under that trap. Yes, the information is very basic. Yes, it's very easy. Yes, it's not incriminating, but there is going to be a trap. They want you to speak. You can't have a situation arising where you decide to answer some questions and not answer the other questions. If you're going to do something, you have to ensure that the same rule applies for your stay, maximum period, 7 days. So if you decide to answer questions, you have to answer all the questions for the rest of the time duration that you're there. However, if you stop answering questions in between, say, it's the third day, and you think, oh my God, do I really have to answer these questions? This is too hot for me to handle. It looks very incriminating when that evidence is produced in court, because what the inference will be that you are prepared to answer questions that you find easy and that are not incriminating against you. But when you find that you're going to be incriminated, you are not willing to answer those questions. Therefore, the rule of thumb on a terrorist case is, do not answer any questions that are put to you. You have a right to remain silent. Use that right. That is your right. Don't be afraid of using that right. You don't even have to sit there saying no comment to the questions that the police officers are putting to you. You do not even have to say your name. You do not even have to give your date of birth. You do not even have to say what address they arrested you from. They know all of that information. What you can do is you can just sit there and let the officers talk. Get a solicitor to do a very short statement on your behalf, stating on the legal advice received, the solicitor has advised the client to exercise their right of silence due to the limited disclosure that has been provided to the solicitors. That will give you the protection in the event if you're charged at a later stage by the police and are produced at court, so that an adverse inference is not drawn against you. This is something that the courts will take into account. Why did you not answer questions at a police station when you had the first opportunity to do so? You have a defense there. There is limited disclosure that is given by the police officers. That is the reason why you did not answer the questions. Use that right to protect yourselves and others who may be arrested with you. It is a fundamental, basic right. Use it to your advantage, even if it means for 7 days you're going to sit there and not say anything. It does not hurt you not to say anything. I will give you an example of a case. A client of mine didn't accept the advice that I gave him. He decided to speak. He gave innocent explanations for 7 days to the police officers. He got charged. When we were in the magistrate's court, the prosecutor, Steve Patrick, stood up in the magistrate's court and made an application to the magistrates for an adjournment of the case
because the innocent explanations had to be rebutted by the prosecution, and they were going to be doing that by producing an Islamic expert in court. So don't think that innocent explanations that you may be able to provide would not be twisted and turned and misconstrued in different ways by the police officers. They will be. He thought he would answer the questions, he would not get charged, that will be it, and after 7 days he could go home. He learnt the lesson the hard way. He ended up staying in Belmarsh prison for 10 months, having a trial of his case, but eventually being acquitted. So you can exercise your right of silence. Do it. Because you do not know what the case against you is. You do not know what the allegations are being alleged against you. You do not know what trap they're setting for you. You do not know how they're going to link you with other individuals who may be arrested. So it's not just the answers you're giving, but other individuals as well who may be arrested with you or prior to your arrest or after your arrest, that they will try to link you all together. So you do not know what information anybody's going to give on you or say about you. So it's very, very important for you to have the full picture before you, for you to know exactly what is the case that is being stated against you, for you to have sight of those documents, in order for you to properly answer the questions that will be put to you in the witness box when you go to court. There are other case examples where people are being arrested under what is called Schedule 7 of the Terrorism Act. This Schedule 7 is being used very heavily at the present moment. At any airport, if a person is removed from a ship, aircraft or vehicle, a person can be questioned without any form of suspicion by the police officers. It is normally SO 12, which is Special Branch 12 officers who attend there. They are just below MI5 officers, just slightly above Special Branch 13, who are the anti-terrorist branch officers. They collect information, but they can also arrest a person. What is happening is that there's lots of people who've been questioned, and I've had a lot of cases being reported after the event, and quite a few at the time, as people are becoming slightly more aware of what is happening. You have a right to have a relative or a friend notified of your detention. You have a right to request that a solicitor represent you, free of charge under legal aid. You do not have to answer questions relating to third parties, as you are only being arrested for your part under the Terrorism Act, for any part you may have played that the officers suspect you of, not third parties of. Unfortunately, what is happening is that a lot of people are answering questions relating to other members of the family, relating to people they may know, and they think, well, if we answer these questions, we are going to be let go of, and that's the end of the day. What you have to understand is that there are now arrests taking place as a result of people providing answers under Schedule 7. So what can happen to you under Schedule 7? Your property can be detained for a maximum period of up to 7 days. You have a duty to answer questions relating to you. If you exercise the right of silence, you can be arrested, and if found guilty, imprisoned for 3 months and or fined. The maximum sentence period is 3 months. A person can be detained for up to 9 hours, beginning with the time of the examination of the person. So it is very important for you to ensure that you have a solicitor available to represent you and to properly advise you at the early stages. Unfortunately, what is taking place is
And I'll illustrate this by way of a case example, is that people answer questions thinking, well, we will answer everything under the sun. And what happened in this particular case was that my client was in Dover. He was an Algerian client. He had an Algerian passport and a Swedish passport. He was a Swedish national as well. The officer suspected this particular client due to the fact that they suspected his Swedish passport was fake, and also because they found £7,500 cash when the client was travelling out. Although it's not illegal for you to take cash of up to £10,000 out of the country without being questioned by customs and excise, but if you're a Muslim and you're found with cash, they do stop you because they suspect that the sums of money is going to be used for funding terrorist activities. So this person answered the questions under Schedule 7. He ended up being arrested under the Terrorism Act after he'd answered all of the questions without seeking legal advice, thinking, yes, these are simple questions, I can answer them and I can just get rid of them and just make my way home. He then got arrested. He was taken to Folkestone Police Station. He instructed a duty solicitor to represent him. The duty solicitor advised him to answer all of the questions that the officers were putting to him and to make a full and frank admissions of everything. Unfortunately, he followed the duty solicitor's advice. He answered the questions for the first 36 hours, and he was getting himself into more and more deeper waters as the time went on, because his house had been raided, they'd taken various documents from there, his wife was being questioned, there were threats being made that the wife would also be arrested under the Terrorism Act, they had very young children, therefore the children would have been taken by social services because they didn't have any other immediate family in this country, unless other arrangements were made for somebody else to look after the children in the interim. So you can imagine the panic state that this individual was in. Somebody then advised his wife to basically change solicitors. Luckily, the call was put through. It is not normal for the call to be put through. And on the 19th of June, I travelled out to Dover to speak to the client. An extension had been granted for 7 days. I advised the client not to answer any questions in relation to the £7,500 which had been obtained as a loan from the bank. And they suspected that the sums of money was going to be used by the client to finance some terrorist groups in Algeria. There was no shred of evidence to support the assertions and the inference that was being made by the police officers. The client accepted the advice and remained silent. He then got charged, although there was not sufficient evidence to charge this particular client, in my view. He was remanded in Belmarsh prison for 2 months and subsequently released in August, as there was not sufficient evidence to charge the client. He then went ahead and signed a piece of paper stating that the £7,500 sums of money that had been detained by the police officers could be returned back to the bank, as he did not intend to use that money for any funding any terrorist organisation. So he's more than happy to refund that sums of money. So what happens to this unfortunate client? Arrangements are made for the properties to be returned. His car was full because he was going to France, taking gifts for members of the family. Unbeknown to me, he had notified the police officers that he was going to be going to France straight away after retrieving the gifts from the police officers. The Secretary of State had made a decision which we were not aware of, and that decision was that this particular client would not be allowed to come back into the United Kingdom once he had left the United Kingdom. So the poor guy went on the Eurotrain to France, and he met with two of the police officers. They served him with the letter signed by the Secretary of State stating that he was not allowed to come back into this country ever. If he ever returned back into the country, then he would be deported and he would not have a right to stay here. This particular client has a wife and children here. They have basically been living separate and apart ever since the Secretary of State got the police officers to serve the letter on him. So it's very important for people to realize that even if you are released and there isn't any evidence against you, the Secretary of State, if you're not a British citizen, can make an application and exercise his discretion, stating that you can be excluded from the country because your presence is not conducive to the public interest. And that's it. There is no right of appeal to this. There is no remedy to this. The other thing is that we have to appreciate the fact that those individuals who are living in this country should, wherever it's possible, obtain status in this country and as soon as possible apply for British citizenship. Because unfortunately what is happening is that you get clients who are living in this country and they have been granted indefinite leave. They do not give up their other nationality and they've travelled abroad thinking that there was no information on them that would link them to any terrorist activity. And one of the cases that comes into my mind is a Moroccan case where the client went abroad to see his wife. Harmless, you would say. You would think, rather. Didn't end up being that harmless for him. He ended up being arrested under the Terrorism Act. There was no evidence to charge him, even under the Moroccan provisions, because they could not find anything to link him with any terrorist activity. But unfortunately, he was not provided with any assistance from the British government, and I have letters in my possession in black and white stating that they do not owe any duty to the client because he is not a British national, even though he has been granted indefinite leave to remain in this country. So it's very important for people who wish to travel out, even if you are not involved in any criminal activity, to ensure that you attempt to obtain British citizenship and to travel out on your British passports. That way the British government would have a responsibility towards you. I think that brings me on to the Immigration, Nationality and Asylum Act 2002, in particular section 40 of the Act, where the Secretary of State can deprive a person of their citizenship status if the Secretary of State is satisfied that the person has done anything seriously prejudicial to the vital interest of the UK. There is only one man that this particular provision has been used against, and that person is Sheikh Abu Hamza. He is a test case that is going through the courts at the present moment. Yes, a person does have a right of appeal. But supposing if there's a case scenario, you have two nationalities. You have, for example, a British nationality, say for argument's sake, a Pakistani nationality, because you want to get inheritance there or you don't want to pay your visa trip to Pakistan or for whatever reasons that you may have acquired your Pakistani nationality. So what happens to that particular individual? You can be made your British nationality can be taken away by you by the Secretary of State exercising this power against you. So he does not have sufficient evidence to arrest you under the Terrorism Act. So what does the Secretary of State do? He brings in a provision under the Immigration Act to really arrest you for a criminal offence. But under the guise of immigration, because they know
that everybody talks about immigration and people are, you know, don't want immigrants living in this country. They think there's too many immigrants in this country. So the law is passed. So what can happen is that your Pakistani nationality can be taken away. You will then, sorry, I apologize, your British nationality can be taken away and you will only have your Pakistani nationality. You are therefore recognized as a foreigner in this country because you're not British. And once you're recognized as a foreigner, then the Terrorism Act 2001 can apply to you as the law stands at the present moment. Part 4 of that law states that foreigners can be arrested and detained indefinitely. And the word here that is very important here is indefinitely, without trial, without evidence against you. You can have a review take place of your case 6 months later by the immigration tribunal, not even a criminal court, where you will not have access to all of the information against you. So what happens is you have a part hearing which takes place where your lawyers can be present, you can be present, and the other part of the hearing that takes place is in private, where what is called a special advocate will go in and represent your client. He's appointed by the government. You cannot defend your client, you cannot rebut the evidence or the allegations that are being made because you're not privy to those allegations and the evidence. So MI5 officers can go in there and give evidence against an individual. And you will not even know what that evidence is. So those men do not have a right to a fair trial because it's not going to be a fair trial if they cannot even rebut the evidence that is being provided against them. The Privy Council was charged with the review of the Anti-Terrorism Act 2001. And I'm pleased to state that even the Privy Council are of the view that part 4 of that act should be appealed. There is a letter which has been prepared, which I would request people to sign and send to the MPs in order to ensure that those Muslims who have been detained at the present moment in Belmarsh prison under part 4 of the Terrorism Act obtain our support so that we can attempt to lobby the government so that those individuals can be released and be free men. If they're going to be charged, then they should be charged like every other citizen in this country, and there should not be any difference whether you're British or a non-British person. The same rule of law should apply to everyone. There's a recent case which I did, I think it was last week. What happened was that a client of mine, very rich man, he's not involved in terrorism, Iraqi client, he was going to sign some contracts in Jordan. He works for some oil company. He was stopped by a special branch at Heathrow Airport. He only had £4,000 cash on him. And he left, he was on his way out. They asked him some basic questions and they allowed him to go. What happened was that the British intelligence passed on the information to Jordan. The Jordan authorities picked him up as soon as his flight landed in Jordan. He was detained for 6 weeks. He was tortured and not allowed to even see any daylight for 6 weeks. His father was suffering from cancer and was going through an operation. He could not even make a call to his ill father. We attempted to obtain lawyers in Jordan to ensure that a habeas corpus application could be undertaken for this particular client so that we could discover his whereabouts and that I could make arrangements for Red Cross
to go in to see my client to ensure that the torture he was being subjected to could be reduced. Unfortunately, none of the lawyers in Jordan were paid to take on the case. The client went on hunger strike, and the Jordan authorities thought that he may not survive, put him on the next flight back to England. And he made calls to his friend, who contacted me immediately, and I made arrangements to go down to Heathrow Airport in order to receive the client, for ambulance and medical assistance to be provided to the client on wheelchair. Soon as he was taken off the flight, he was put into a wheelchair, and Special Branch SO12 wanted to interview the client under Schedule 7. There were lots of delaying tactics that were being employed in order to ensure that he didn't have a sister present. Thank God he got the message on his mobile text message saying to instruct me, and that a lawyer was waiting outside for him. We went inside, he answered some of the basic questions. It was so sad that the police officers were laughing at his injuries. They stated to me that my client had more flesh on him than prior to his departure. They mocked the fact that he had severe pain, and he was reduced in tears. It was really unfortunate that my client couldn't hear these comments that were being made behind his back. I notified the client of what was being said. Anyway, cut the long story short, after the Schedule 7 questioning had concluded, MI5 officers approached us and stated that they wanted my client to now provide voluntary information to MI5. I did not even consult with my client, whose English was limited, and stated to the officers that my client would not be cooperating with MI5 officers. They had removed his computer equipment, printing equipment that he had taken with him for his work purposes. So he went down to Scotland Yard on Wednesday, gone last week, and as I had advised him, he was petrified of going on his own. I told him to go on his own because I knew that there would be special branch officers waiting to see him in order to attempt to entice him to work for them. Exactly as I had advised the client, three officers were present. On the pretext of returning his computer, the officers attempted to entice him to work for them. And as I advised the client that if the officers did so, that he should state he didn't wish to say anything to them, and that he was going to ring his solicitor, and that anything that the officers were going to be saying should be said in the presence of his solicitor. It is very important to realise that information is being passed to other countries, and other countries unfortunately are carrying out the torture on behalf of the British government and the American government. This isn't the only case where people are being picked up. There's been other cases, a very unfortunate case where somebody was picked up in Gambia and have now been taken by the Americans to Cuba and are serving sentence. Well, definitely staying in Cuba until their release can be obtained. It's very important to realise that if you are stopped and suspected, that you notify somebody, and if you're not a British passport holder, for God's sake, don't travel out to any of the Arab countries or any of the Muslim countries, because you can be picked up on an international warrant, either at the request of US or United Kingdom, and taken, tortured, interrogated. If you're lucky, you will be released. If you're not lucky, you can be taken to Cuba and kept there. I think the last case I'll talk about, my voice is getting really dry at the moment. The last case I'll talk about is the recent case that was in the public domain of the four people I represented from the Tooting area. I think some people may have heard about one of the clients being assaulted. In that particular case, the rape took place, I believe, at about 5:40 in the morning. The officers went into the bedroom, and the client did not attempt to resist arrest taking place. Unfortunately, physical and verbal abuse was directed against the client. He was handcuffed and assaulted in the presence of his wife. His wife was eventually allowed to go into the other room in order for her to cover and change. Subsequently, what happened was the person was taken down the stairs, kicked and hit by the police officers, and verbal abuse was directed against this particular individual. Then he was taken into the front room of the house, and what is very racist comments were made by the police officers, whereby the police officers put the individual in a praying position and stated, "Where is your God? You are in prayer now." This shows the kind of Islamophobia that is taking place, that this particular terrorist war is not taking place against individuals, but is in reality taking against Islam. Unfortunately, he was further assaulted, touched, stripped, and eventually taken in the van to the police station. Again, he was subjected to further abuse, physical, verbal, and attempts were made to strangle this individual. He then arrived at the police station where the agony was partly over. He was seen by the doctors in police custody, and a private doctor was arranged. For the first time in my life, a private doctor had been arranged to examine a client. And he was examined at length by the doctor. He had blood in his urine, and unfortunately they still would not take the client to the hospital for him to be examined. But what I found very sad was the fact that when we were at the police station and an application was being made for further detention of this particular individual and the others there, and we questioned the police officers as to the injuries that the client had sustained, there were 10 police officers who were present in the magistrate's court. And the detective inspector whom we were speaking to stated that the injuries were not as a result of any arrest taking place, and that they were old injuries. This annoyed me to such an extent that I notified counsel that I would be more than happy to go into the witness box in order to give evidence against the police officers, because the injuries that I had seen on this particular individual were fresh injuries, the cuts were fresh, and they were not old injuries. Representations were made to the district judge, and the police officers backtracked without me even having to go into the witness box to give evidence, because the officers were fully aware if they were going to call a solicitor a liar, they would have to think twice. So it's very important for people to realise that these kind of things are unfortunately happening, and they shouldn't be allowed to happen to anybody else. It's very important for people to become aware of what is going on in the community. It is also very important for people to understand that don't basically bury your head in the sand thinking it's not going to happen to us. It can happen to you. If you're a Muslim, it can happen to you because you can be picked up. And it's very important for you to make your families aware of what can or can't happen, what the rules are, what the regulations are, and how you should basically react if something like that were to happen to you. There is unfortunately a lot of problems that are taking place against with the sisters whose husbands are being detained. Not with this particular case, but with other cases. The women don't know how to do shopping. The women don't know how to, what the basic rights are. The women don't know how to survive. The women don't know how to communicate. And there is no internal support network for the women. And it's important that not only the men, but there is some structure for support for the women to be provided and for the children. I give a very, very short example. It was an Algerian case that I did with about 2 months ago, which was again a high profile one, where the client's wife had arrived from Algeria. She didn't really know, and she couldn't speak English. I can't communicate in Arabic, unfortunately. There wasn't any family or relatives here, so she was very heavily pregnant. What happened was that she had a 2-year-old daughter. They were put in a hotel. Unfortunately, she couldn't speak the language, she didn't know how to order food. The client was panic-stricken, worried about his wife, not being able to communicate, not being able to feed herself, not having money to look after herself or to provide food. I had to make arrangements in order for somebody else who could communicate in Arabic to communicate with the client's wife, so and make arrangements for her to be picked up, find a sister who would be able to look after her and the child in the interim, because she was not allowed to stay in the house. And unfortunately, all of these arrangements took such a long time, from 6:30 in the morning to 8 p.m. at night. This particular sister and the child did not have any food to eat. So it's very important for us to also ensure that our women become a bit more independent and can survive if something like this were to happen. So they've got to know what their basic rights are. If the man is being detained, for him, the women to be able to claim income support, housing benefit, so you know their houses aren't being repossessed. There's lots of people in that particular case I'm explaining about, the Algerian lady. Because she doesn't have stay in this country, she was a dependent on her husband. She can't claim income support. She can't get that child benefit. So she's left at the mercy of the community, for the community to provide for her, for the community to not only give her shelter because she's been made homeless because the rent can't be paid, as her husband's in Damas prison currently, but also for food to be provided for the child, for the newborn baby, and for them to be looked after whilst he is on remand. So at least, whilst he's in custody, somebody can support her and look after her. We make arrangements for somebody to look after the sister, and we're making arrangements for somebody to pay, you know, money to be paid to her, so that, you know, she doesn't become too much of a burden on the brother and sister who are looking after this particular lady and the children. So it's very important for us to have something where we can make these arrangements without, you know, running around like headless chickens trying to find somebody to be able to cope in this situation. And it's very important for the sisters to be able to maneuver and to become more independent and to be able to do things, maybe without, you know, being dependent on their husbands. So if something like this were to happen, they can learn to cope, because it makes life easy. I think I've spoken enough, I'm really tired, so I think I'll leave the matter for question and answer session now. Thank you.